They say it's in your blood, a game that can't be won, only played. A love affair. It satisfies the soul and frustrates the intellect. The greatest game ever played, golf. It's real. And this is Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of legendary golfer Billy Casper, talking golf with you for more than two decades. And now, here's Brian and Bob.
The greatest game that has ever been played, that is exactly right. Welcome in, Brian Taylor, Bob Casper. You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Thanks for joining us here on another episode. And I'll tell you what, there is really no place that celebrates this great game like the Masters and Augusta National and all that they put on. I can't wait for next week. The Augusta National Women's Amateur will be played next week. Two rounds at Champions Gate with the final round on Saturday at Augusta National, and then the drive, chip, and putt finals on Sunday, and the Masters week kicking off on Monday. It really is amazing. Wednesday, the par three contest with the pageantry of the families being out there, and it just, you hope for beautiful weather because that is the best way to celebrate that. But it's just like, this is what the game is. The game is bigger than any of the people participating. So you come out, you participate in this event, you smile and wave, everybody enjoys, they clap, the patrons really enjoy the whole scene, right? Everybody just has a nice little party, and then everybody buckles down and grinds out, trying to win the green jacket starting the next day. So it's...
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on to your seat. Yeah, it's really cool how everything kind of ramps up right from the get-go. You know, there's guys that aren't playing the week before that will get there on a Saturday and play some practice rounds on Saturday and Sunday when there's not a lot of crowds. More so a Sunday because of the ANWA being there on Saturday. But it's just really cool to be there and feel how everything starts to ramp up, how the players come into the media center and they start talking about the event and what the golf course is like and their games and that kind of thing. And then, like you said, Wednesday's the par three contest. And then it's like, go home, go to sleep, boys, rest up, because the shotgun's going to go off and this golf tournament is going to be played and we're going to crown a new Masters champion.
Did you say shotgun?
Yeah.
What does that even mean? The shotgun's going to go off?
A shotgun start?
We don't shotgun start at the Masters.
I know we don't. It's just symbolic.
I know what you're saying.
The gun goes off and boom.
I see what you mean. The gun goes off. I just wanted to clarify because of all the conversation around shotguns and live and everything. I just didn't want anyone to be like, wait, what? They're shotgunning at the Masters this year? No.
No.
Yes. The gun goes off and they're off and running. Hey, we're off and running. Stay tuned. We're getting into it. Coming up next right here on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back to the show, Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, brought to you in part by Black Desert Resort. Go to blackdesertresort.com, find out about exclusive real estate opportunities. Right now, the latest offering is the Family Village, and inside Family Village is the water park. These condo units, anything from studio to three bedrooms, surround the water park with the lazy river, the rapid river, the surf pools, just the lounge area. It's going to be such a fun part of the resort. And it's all within walking distance of the Resort Center Hotel where the pro shop is. Golf Village is just across the way. Boardwalk Village with all its shopping and dining kind of bridges the gap between those villages. It's a great spot. And there's opportunities to buy now. Golf Village is sold out. Resort Center is sold out. Family Village is nearly sold out. So jump in, get it while you can. Great opportunities to be a part of the growth of this brand new resort in Southern Utah. There's rental income opportunities. Find out more, blackdesertresort.com. And oh, by the way, if you're interested in the PGA Tour event that is coming up in October, there are sponsorship opportunities and so forth. There's hospitality tickets. General admission tickets will be going on sale shortly. And you can find out more about that at blackdesertevents.com. So those of you who are
volunteer opportunities, correct, too?
Yeah, the volunteers, I think, are pretty darn full, to be honest.
Are they?
Yeah, okay. But there are a volunteer. You can find out more at blackdesertevents.com on that for sure. But if you're in Utah and you're driving from Salt Lake South, you'll see all the billboards, the partnership with the Utah Jazz, the tour events, the hotel offerings, everything. It's pretty, it's like a whole, the whole drive is Black Desert billboards, which is pretty remarkable. But yeah, check it out. BlackDesertEvents.com and BlackDesertResort.com. All right. Thanks again for being with us. Brian and Bob at Real Golf on X, where you can join the conversation, listen anytime. Find us on the different podcast sites as well by searching Golf Radio and Real Golf Radio. Tony Finau. So when I saw Tony go out in round number two, he opened up with a 32. I said, great to see Tony finally getting it rolling in here, you know, ahead of the Masters, right? Just preparation for the Masters. And then I saw he bogeyed 10 and I was like, ah, which is the first hole, but his 10th hole.
Right.
And then I got busy doing some stuff. Check back in and woo. Wow. He got it going.
Little 30 on the back nine.
Mm.
You ever bogey? What? Four birdies and an eagle?
Yeah. That'll
giddy
do.
Giddy up.
That'll do.
That'll do it. Absolutely. That'll do it.
I was going to ask you if you've ever shot 30 on nine, but I'm sure you've done that many. So I have not 30. Yeah. I think I've seen 32.
I broke 30 on nine before.
Yeah. I figured as soon as I was about to ask it, I'm like, of course you have.
Yeah. Yeah. He jumped up 34 spots.
That's okay.
Nine under par.
And for two rounds, he's picking up over almost 10 and a half, a little over 10 and a half shots on the field strokes gained. So obviously that is a good sign. Tony's the defending champ this week as well. And I'll tell you what, right down the line, you also have Scottie Scheffler, who, you know what, look, when you've won two in a row, including the Players' Championship, why not keep it rolling? He opens with a 65. Now, let me tell you something. I was driving down to Black Desert this week, and so I flipped it on to listen to the PGA Tour on Sirius XM, guys, and they spent half an hour talking about the fact that Scotty had shaved his beard. And how can you possibly shave your beard when you're coming off two straight wins? If you win two in a row, let that thing grow, is what they were saying.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know what Scotty said?
30 minutes?
30 minutes.
30 minutes.
30-minute beard talk. So they finally played Scotty's comment, and he said, yeah, I mean, it was nice for a couple of weeks because I just didn't have to worry about it, but it started to get long, and I got a haircut, and I was thinking maybe I should try to trim it, but I didn't really know how to do that, so I just shaved it. Now, that, like, if that doesn't embody Scottie Scheffler, I don't know what does, right? It's like, well, I wasn't sure how to trim my beard, so I just shaved it off. Okay.
What's wrong with that?
Right.
And he's got the scruff going again this week.
Well, some of us are blessed with less, like, hair maintenance issues, and others have lots of hair maintenance issues. Yeah. I happen to fall on the not so much of a follicle, issue, right? I don't have a whole lot. Even if I tried to grow a beard, it wouldn't show up for about 2 weeks. I have no hair on my head. So it makes it nice that way. But for guys like Scotty, I mean, he wakes up and he looks like he's been on a, he'd look like I've been out on a camping trip for 2 weeks.
Oh my. Yep.
But the point of this, it doesn't matter what your facial hair looks like. It's what your golf swing's doing. And right now, Scotty's golf swing is just freaking on fire. My. And his putter, which was always the big bugaboo, is no problem.
Yeah, the putter.
I just love the last conversation.
Events he's played, excuse me, the last two events he's played, he has won. So he's 2-0 with that mallet spider putter with the plumber's neck on it. And yeah, he's making spots. That's for sure.
Would you be worried about shaving, Bob, if you just went to him?
No, no.
But you're not going to mess with your putter.
No. I mean, golfers are, what's that word? They're what?
Superstitious, yeah.
Superstitious, yeah. And they've got some traditions that they do, like ball marks and different types of coins and dates on coins and the way they mark their ball and the way they just all kinds of stuff. They have different superstitions, each and every golfer. I don't think Scotty Scheffler really cares.
No, of anyone that has superstitions, he probably doesn't.
No.
I have a couple. I sometimes don't like to see the number four on my golf ball. I prefer to play one, twos, and threes. Or just give me
you don't want to make pars or birdies.
Well, I know four is not a bad score, but I don't want to think four. I want to think three or two. Those are more pleasant numbers. Okay. I don't even mind like jumping to like an eight or something like that, right?
No. See, I don't like those upper numbers, five, six, seven, and eights. When I get a box of golf balls with five, six, seven, and eights on them, I turn them around and grab the ones with one, two, threes, and fours.
Okay. See, I don't like 5 and 6 is in play. I don't really, 8's not really in play. Typically, I don't worry about 8. But
oh,
eight,
it is in play, Brian.
But 8 is a cool, like it's a great number. I used that in high school playing football. So I can kind of identify with that. And it doesn't, it's not a golf number to me. I know I've shot plenty of 8s, Bob. Are you trying to say that I've shot plenty of 8s? I'll admit I've shot plenty of 8s. Come on, you don't need to like say it like that. But the other thing is my other number, my basketball number in high school was 42. So I remember I got a box of 42s once. Well, I couldn't get that out of my
head. Why not?
That's a bad golf number. I couldn't do it.
Why?
Because 42 is a terrible. I don't want anything in the 40s. That doesn't work for me.
Oh, my dad had 51.
He had 51 on his golf ball?
Yeah.
Well, if you've won 51 PGA Tour events, then you're not worrying about what numbers
are. It's okay.
That's a flex.
Yeah, 51's fine.
That's a flex. 42 for me is a reality. That's why I don't want to put that on there. You know where the other thing I get funny about the numbers is the golf cart.
Really?
Oh yeah. If I pull up and I happen to grab a golf cart and it says 63, I'm like, let's go.
Let's go, baby. But if it says 82,
I'm
you're running
carts.
Away.
I switch carts. I'm not using cart 80. I'm not.
Oh, that's so funny.
I won't do it.
Oh, that is so funny.
You can put me in,
oh,
you can put me in carts 1 through 30. I don't care. But you start getting me in carts 80 to 80, whatever, I'm out.
Even high 70s, you're out of there.
Yeah, I don't like that number. I want to, like, if it was 72, I'm like, let's go. Let's go.
Oh,
even
part my of gosh. Talk about superstitions. I've never known that. That's a new thing. After 25 years on Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor, he tells me about golf cart numbers. Wow.
It's a thing. Can't tell That's me I'm the thing. Only one out there. Hit us up at Real Golf. Tell me you're not looking at the golf cart number.
Tell us some of your superstitions. Yeah.
Superstitions. I don't really have too many other than that. Like I don't, you know, one thing I don't buy into is
what
the first birdie curse. That's the dumbest thing ever. Someone birdies the first hole. They're like, oh, that's first birdie curse. I'm like,
no,
really?
That's stupid.
Yeah. That is not a thing to me. Hey, you can't birdie them all if you don't birdie the first. That's the way
that's
I look
exactly
at it.
What I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm up. I've already got you by one. I'm going to bury you today when that first birdie goes in.
Yeah. People actually say it though. It's like, oh man, I just shouldn't have birdied the first. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Right.
Sounds like they play most of their golf at the Muni.
Sounds like they play most of their golf between their ears, which is what we all do. But anyway, hey, so I just was kind of giving the guys on PGA Tour a bad time for doing a beard talk segment. We just sort of
beard talk. We didn't talk about beard talk.
We got into
superstitions,
really funny superstitions. Which is kind of what they went to. But anyway, all right. Hey, listen,
good stuff.
Coming up next, we got so much more to get to. It's pre Masters and more next right here on Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Thank you again for joining us here on Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper at Real Golf on X. Give us a follow. Join the conversation. Let us know what you think. A little superstition talk. Hey, I'm sticking with that that idea of the first birdie curse is bogus. Look at it. I was thinking about this in the break. If you went out and you're playing basketball and you make your first shot, are you all of a sudden going to think anything other than give me the ball?
Geez, honey, I'm hot today.
That's it. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. Give me the ball.
You were dropping a little Caddyshack in there, though, weren't you?
I was. Yeah. Yep.
That was a peach. That's where you were going.
Hun.
That's the craziest thing. I'll tell you what though. Here's the biggest superstition. And I guess I do buy into this one, Bob. The par three curse at Augusta.
Oh, now see? That one's still holding and still going. So, yes.
Tell me
you win the par three. Nobody has ever won the par three tournament has won the tournament.
For the same year.
In the same year.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. So if you're a serious contender for the Masters, there is no way you're signing that scorecard at the on the Wednesday.
Well, what you're doing is you're plunging it in the lake on number 9 if you're having a chance.
If you happen to roll a bunch of birdies in.
Yeah.
Made a hole in one. Or you just let your kid hit the, or your caddy hit the shot on nine, and you're, you've effectively disqualified yourself. That's what you do. And that's okay, because look, somebody's going to win it. Someone's going to get some crystal, and that's okay. And it's a still a fun celebration. I don't want guys to not want to try to hit good golf shots because they don't want to win the par three, the ergo curse their chances of winning the tournament. But I'm okay if they tank it at the end so that they don't, or not
just
sign their
caddy
scorecard.
In, like you said, I like that.
Bring someone in from the gallery or do something to disqualify yourself.
To make your putt.
Pick up your
whatever.
Ball. Pick up your ball. It's such a great scene, though. Honestly, I think that's underrated, the whole par three tournament that they do. It's so good. Yeah. Par three contest.
It's so much fun. It's fun to be out there, fun to be in amongst the people. What's really cool is those holes. The ropes are like right on the green. And I can remember my dad when he was getting older, he's, I'm not playing the three. He's, I don't want to kill anybody because it's, the ropes are right on the green and the people are sitting right there.
He didn't want to miss it right at him. I appreciate that. There was a kid last week. I forget the name now, but he was in contention on Sunday, and he hit a lady, and he was so shook by it. He had a hard time concentrating and ended up, he was still shook by it by the end of the round, and he said it affected him. He couldn't really play, couldn't concentrate. So I can imagine that stuff. And nobody wants to do that.
They don't.
I would have loved to have caddied for your dad around the par three tournament. I did caddy for him on Sunday before the tournament around the par three course. So I did walk the par three course, but not with the people, not in the actual official event.
Yeah.
And he did let me hit a shot on nine, by the way.
One year.
In the coveralls.
I was caddying for him one year in the par three, and we were playing with Gabe Brewer and I'm having a senior moment right now.
Yeah, that'll happen.
English player, big giant watches, Ryder Cup captain, his wife passed away.
Oh, Darren Clark.
Darren Clark.
Wow, that was a fun game. I like that.
Good job. I saw him make a two on the second hole. He was with our group.
A two on the second hole of...
in the par three contest.
A two?
At the Masters. He made two. Or a one, sorry.
Oh,
sorry.
I'm like, what's the significance of a two?
He made a one on the second hole. He made a one on the second hole.
Nice.
Hole in one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you witnessed a Darren Clark hole
witnessed
in one.
Witnessed it. Saw it do it. He hit it just left of the hole, a little bit long, checked and spun and came right back and went in the hole.
Yeah. You know, they replayed Tony the other day. I was watching.
Oh, did golf. They with him snapping his ankle?
Yeah, and he goes running down there and I'm like, oh gosh, please don't show this anymore. Please don't show this. You know that look on Tony's face when he goes down after he popped his ankle and stood back up and waved at the crowd. But the look on his face was, oh no. I'm trying to pretend like that wasn't a big deal, but that was a big deal.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Wow. And he goes and top tens it on that bum ankle.
Yeah. Goes out and shoots 68 in the first round.
It was unreal.
Hobbling.
Unreal.
Yep.
So, Tony's got a great record at Augusta. We'll talk more about that in our full preview coming up next week, Masters Preview Edition. Can you believe we're to that point in time coming up next week here on the show? Next week is Augusta National Women's Amateur, Drive, Chip, and Putt Finals. It's super exciting. Plus, you know, there's tour events going on. I'll tell you what, Tony has got himself early in the second round, got himself into at the top of the leaderboard with that 62. Impressive stuff. What a... 32-30, unbelievable stuff. Yep. Dropped an eagle in there on his 17th hole. Awesome stuff. I mean, Tony, and making putts, which he wasn't doing in the first round. So that's huge going into Augusta. You know, you look at the record of guys when they've played there. Tony has had, three top tens? Take out the October or the November Masters, and I think he's three or four top tens in the April Masters. And he's played in the final group with Tiger in 2019, right? So, I mean, the guy has a really good record. He's been there before. It's a big golf course. He's a big time player. He always has felt like his game is made for Augusta National. He loves that tournament. He's excited to play there. And I know that's the one he would want to win the most. And so when you look at that, I think to see Tony get the flat stick going on Friday, to see him be able to shoot that score as the defending champ and put himself and get some confidence going there, which I think he needs some confidence, especially on the greens, man, that's going to be huge. And he'll put himself right back in the conversation coming up, you know, at Augusta. So.
Yeah. And you know, it's a golf course. It's a place that he's always loved and wanted to play well at. And like you said, it is a golf course that goes well with his type of game. Tony hits the ball long off the tee, hits great iron shots, leads the tour, or is in the top of tour players with his getting the ball on the greens and hitting greens and that kind of thing. Tony has to putt well at Augusta, and he's proven that that golf course kind of fits his eye, and he gets really good feelings on that golf course with the top tens that he's had there.
The only challenge that Tony's got this week, not the only challenge, one of the biggest challenges that Tony has this week is one Scottie Scheffler, number one in the world. He's won two of his last starts, and he's looking for three in a row, and going into the Masters, just riding high. And, you know, he opened with a 65. So we'll see. Scottie Scheffler right there. It's interesting. You've got on the ladies tour, you've got Nelly Korda, who won her last two starts. And Scottie Scheffler that's won his last two starts. So the number one players in both the women's and the men's game coming off two consecutive wins in their last two starts. And they're both playing this week. I mean, that's, what do you want? Are you not entertained? What else can we deliver for you?
Are you not excited to watch the game of golf right now, especially leading into the Masters and leading into their first major, the ladies? You know, we've also got the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You got the drive, chip, and putt coming up. And then next month, you know, this is major season. We're getting into major season, Masters. We got PGA Championship. We got U.S. Open. And then, of course, in July, we'll have the Open Championship. And then that's followed by the Olympics. So golf is in a good spot right now with the competitions that we've got coming up.
You know, one of the things that I want to talk to Ryan Ballingy about coming up next is about the game, and we're talking about the celebration of the game, but I know he's in Myrtle Beach. What is the golf travel like these days? It seems to be, you hear about TPC Sawgrass going up to basically $1,000 a round. You hear about that kind of stuff. You know, how does that affect everybody when they go out and try to continue to play this game? Because it's so popular right now, can everybody afford it? We'll talk to Ballingy about that next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back to the show, Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and joining us is Ryan Ballingy, golfnewsnet.com. Ryan, how are you, man?
Good, guys. How are you?
We're good. So you're out in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. I've never been out there, but it's like when I think of Myrtle Beach, all I think is like golf mecca.
That's about right. The reputation precedes it. There's, I think at its pinnacle, they probably had 80 courses within a 50-mile radius of here. Now it's more like, you know, 60, 65. But, I mean, it kind of runs the full gamut of $10 pitch and putt to $250 lovely places that are, you know, are ranked in the top resorts or top publicly accessible places in the country. And now they got the PGA Tour coming in May with the Myrtle Beach Classic. That'll be opposite the Wells Fargo Championship this year. And it's cool to kind of see the profile of the place grow over time. I've been coming down here for, my wife, it'll be 16 years this year. And just, it's been steadily growing in terms of reputation, in terms of golf, and in terms of just people who actually live here full time. It's been a cool transformation for the place.
So you met your wife at Myrtle Beach?
No, my sister-in-law lives down here, and she's lived down here since she went to college. Okay. She went to Coastal Carolina. So we've come down here for basically once a year for as long as I've known my wife. And we've come down here and visit. Now, you know, we have our two children. We come down in August for a couple of weeks and stay with her at her house, and we make a nice little summer out of it. So we even went so far as to buy a golf cart that we can take ourselves to and from her house to the beach every day.
All right.
Oh, there you go.
I was
going to
say, you were living a Dan and Shay, you know, summer of 19, you and me song, if that was the case. That's why I was just wondering. I was like, that's super cool. I've never actually met anybody that met in Myrtle Beach that could like go along with that song. But all right. That's okay. That's cool. Very nice.
Yeah. So it's a good place to come down and spend some time.
Yeah, you know, it's you think about golf destinations, places where you can go for golf trips. You know, you think about a lot of different places around the country. What's so exciting about Myrtle Beach, other than just all the different amount of golf courses that they have there, and what else is there to do?
Well, I was talking to someone the other day about it because I've been in the state for the last couple of days, kind of doing the full drive around the state to go see a couple different golf courses. And what I really like about here is you can make of this place what you want it. It can be a place you live. It can be a family destination. It can be a boys trip. It could be a even rowdier trip. I mean, you can go and hit the beach during the day. You can go play golf. But they've got all the kind of trappings and amenities of a tourist place. You know, they got a great Top Golf. They just opened a Pop Stroke, the Tiger Woods putting concept that just opened, I think, like 3 or 4 weeks ago here. So they're kind of getting all of the stuff that if you want to go visit a city, you're going to get it. You're just getting a little different kind of layout compared to a metropolitan area with a big downtown and stuff like that. And I think that's what's really neat about it is this is a place you can live and spend time with your family, be here full time, or you can come here for a beach week or 3 days or 4 days, and you're still going to have a great time either way.
What's the food like?
Scene's growing quite a bit, actually. A lot of cool smaller restaurants have opened up here. My personal favorite place is actually a soul food joint just down the street called Big Mike's. And Big Mike is actually on the city council, and he also just makes some killer soul food. So you roll in there and it's not particularly expensive, but it's really, really, really good. But they also kind of have started bringing in more higher-end restaurants, higher-end chefs, and bringing in concepts that are a little bit more hoity-toity. I think most people think of Myrtle Beach as kind of a middle-class vacation destination, and they're not wrong thinking that, but I think they're starting to try to branch out a little bit and appeal to that higher end of person who's maybe moving here permanently or just has a little bit more money and wants to spend time here.
Ryan Ballingy joining us. He's out in Myrtle Beach. You know, Kiowa's not far away, right? And that's obviously caters to the high end. But this whole golf life is an interesting part of what we've done on the show for 25 years. I think not only following the professional golfers and the best players in the world and seeing and marveling at what they're able to do with golf clubs and a ball, but the whole idea that you immerse yourself in this game. The game isn't just something you go do. You fully become involved. It becomes part of you. It becomes part of your lifestyle, right? So you're wearing, you know, I know you always joke about the PGA merchandise show that it's the quarter zip capital of the world, right? I mean, but that's it, right? It's golf shirts. It's quarter zips. It's, you know, you can tell a golfer when you see him. And it's also about visiting and experiencing places that feature golf, that are just kind of golf crazy. And Myrtle, a lot of South Carolina there, like I said, Kiowa. It's interesting. And I think I've not done Myrtle Beach, but it always feels like it sort of encapsulates that idea of the golf life, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, I played golf yesterday down in Bluffton, South Carolina, which is about 3.5 hours from here. And the reason I entirely made that trip was because of golf. I played golf with a guy I met, Brendan Sweeney, works at French Lick Resort. He's become one of my best friends. I mean, I spend more days with him over the course of the year than a lot of people. I met a guy, Tiernan Byrne, who took Brendan and I around in Ireland. He owns a company that does golf tours, Club Choice Ireland. Played with a kid who plays on the Corn Ferry Tour, Bryson Nimmer. I never would have met any of those people were it not for golf. And so many of the most important people I've ever met in my entire life are because of golf. It just creates a common bond that you work off of, and you know, you kind of make some generally right assumptions about someone who plays golf, and it makes quick friends. It makes quick acquaintances. It's great for networking. whether, you know, I become your best friend or I'm the, you know, someone to go whack it around with. I mean, that's what's possible because of golf. And then, like you guys said, to go travel so many places in the world because I wanted to play a golf course there, or there was a compelling golf course there that I just had to see. I mean, that's been the bulk of my travel for the last 20 years of my life. And so it, you know, I'm in the unique situation we are to be able to work in golf for a living. But even if you're not to that, you know, if you're not doing this professionally, that's what golf does for a lot of people. I think that's my favorite part about it. Honestly, at a certain point, the actual playing of golf becomes secondary to the people I've got to meet and have laughs with and have drinks with and travel with and the places I've been able to see just because I wanted to go play golf somewhere.
Yeah. Kind of interesting. You know, back before COVID, golf was kind of a little bit stagnant. And then COVID came around and golf just like skyrocketed, in part because of other opportunities around the game of golf, like Top Golf, like you mentioned. Also now Tiger has that putting course, the social aspect behind the game and not and hitting golf balls and not necessarily just going out and playing golf. But, you know, for a lot of the criticisms of the game were because golf is very expensive to play. You've got clubs, you've got daily fees, you've got golf courses that or golf clubs that you need to buy and purchase to be able to play. It's a lot of time, 4 to 5 hours, 6 hours to play around the golf, that kind of thing. What are some of your thoughts around the game and especially around the costs of the game right now?
I do worry that we are kind of reaching a point where prices are going to start to overwhelm at least some percentage of people who have taken up the game because of the pandemic or just before or just after. Even speaking around the courses near where I live in the Washington, D.C. area, even the public tracks, and they're good courses, they're good quality courses, but they're wanting $75, $85, $95, whereas 4 or 5 years ago, it might have been $40, $50. And I know costs have gone up for lots of people, and also something that's more popular and kind of is a finite resource is tee times. You know, those things go up in price when more people want them. But my fear is that between that and driver price creep, where, you know, driver used to be like $350 to $500, you know, $500 was a lot for a driver. And now you're pushing $800 on a driver. Iron sets, really, I don't feel like they've changed as drastically in price, but they have changed too. And everything is just a little bit more expensive to add up to the point that maybe you don't play as much, or maybe you keep that set of clubs that you have for longer. You keep that bag you have for longer. You don't want to pay $300 for your next stand bag. So I worry that can kind of stagnate golf a little bit, but as what you said, we have so many kind of golf adjacent, golf alternative things now that has been the one of the big stories of driving growth in golf participation, getting people to realize that you can say you play golf and you don't have to belong to a club or go to the local course down the street every week. You can go do it at a Top Golf or a driving range or a pop stroke or a simulator club, you know, go sit at a fire and golf for a day and see people go in and play golf. They're playing golf too, just the same as I would out on the 18 hole golf course. So I think for as much as I'm worried about price creep and how much everything in golf is going up in price, it's also kind of balanced out to some degree by having so many good alternatives that I think have opened a lot of people's eyes, even more traditional golfers, to lots of different ways to play golf and be involved in the game.
I think Myrtle Beach, Ryan Ballingy joining us, golfnewsnet.com. I think Myrtle Beach is probably a good example. You mentioned there's some a variety of scale of golf experiences that you can have out there, right? From inexpensive to really expensive. I kind of look at these golf courses a bit like that sports experience, right? So, you know, the Utah Jazz here in our home state, we go to Jazz games. You can get a ticket to go to a Jazz game for $25-$35, right? You're sitting in the upper deck, you're way high, whatever. But there's an experience for that. You can get in. And then, you know, my wife and I had a chance to sit courtside this year. A friend of mine gifted them. I didn't throw down, but those tickets were, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a ticket or something like that to sit courtside, right? That was a different kind of experience. So I look at it like you go play TPC Sawgrass. What do they want? $900. If you want to play Pebble Beach and you want to book your tee time in advance, you have to stay at the resort, which is $900 to $1,000. Your tee time, six. So you're pushing with caddy fees and whatnot, you're pushing $2,000 to play Pebble Beach. I played the Ocean Course at Kiawa. It was $600 plus $150 for the caddy. That's $750. So you start looking at some of that and you go, okay. Or if you happen to go to Scotland, you're going to pay a little premium to play, you know, the Old Course or any of the British Open Rota courses, things like King's Barnes, things like that, right? But you look at it almost like that's the experience. So, and yet at the same time, you hope that there continues to be opportunities to go out for the $40-$50 and still play golf on a regular basis where you don't have to throw that kind of money down every single time.
Yeah, and I think as people who work in golf, we tend to focus a little bit more on those higher end places, those top 100, top 200, pick your list of top places to play, best resorts, because they are outstanding. They are special and they do get a lot of attention for good reason, but there are also thousands and thousands of courses in this country that they're $25 to play with a cart and they're not in incredible shape. No name architect did them. They don't have some great marketing team or a killer logo or great merch. A good place to go play golf and have a good time. And those places need to continue to exist. Those places need to continue to thrive. And I think that they can, but they just won't ever get the same kind of amount of attention that, you know, we give to Abandon or Streamsong or Sand Valley or Pinehurst. I mean, these incredible places, like you said, for most people, the amount of money they spend to go experience them is most likely a once in a lifetime opportunity. And those places get celebrated, but I think there should be a cheering section for the everyday, the relatively mundane places that we play that are, they're just as good and fun to play golf and whack the ball around as anywhere else.
So having said that, what are some of the places that you like or the places that you've been to that are really, really good values for people?
Down here in Myrtle?
Or just, or
wherever. Just in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this place, hidden gem answer from yesterday. We played this place called Riverton Point. Fascinating story. It was a housing development golf course that the people who owned it, they went under. Toll Brothers bought it. They're a big developer. And they let it lay fallow for 12 years because they just weren't ready to build houses on this huge space yet. They wind up building a reinstitute the course. They had people maintaining it the whole time and just no one was playing it. Go out there, like, I don't really know what to expect from this. It's probably not going to be very good. It was phenomenal. And it was $90. And, you know, a place that just down the street we played the day prior probably would have gone for $225. It was better than that by a mile. It wasn't even close. I love places like that. You still got the Sweetens Coves of the world that are kind of this value you can't believe. The Palm Beach Par 3 course is one of my favorites in America. It's such a great value. And you're playing golf on the water. Pacific Grove is still a great place. It's incredible out in the West Coast, which is kind of like the poor man's Pebble Beach. For the price, you can't beat that. Down here, I love True Blue, which is Mike Strand's design. They're right next to each other. True Blue and Caledonia Golf and Fish Club. And they've crept up a little bit in price over the years. They have good package deals. And I'm trying to think of the other kind of like best deal in America places. There's a couple up north, up in the Minnesota area. Giants Ridge is really, really good. White Bear Yacht Club, I've heard, is incredible. I haven't played there yet, but I'd like to go check that out. Wasonia Links is really, really good. I mean, a little bit creeping on price there, but I mean, there are so many places I've been in this country that the price that you pay for the experience that you get is just phenomenal. But just the same, I'd be happy to roll down the street. I live about a mile from our local muni. It's called Northwest Golf Links. It's a 7,400-yard golf course that hosts U.S. Open local qualifiers, and it's run by our county. You can go play it for $45 with a cart and have just an absolute great time. And those places exist, and we don't get to talk about them because they don't have the, you know, chest puffery to be able to tell it from the mountaintop that how great of a deal that is. And I feel like that's part of the problem. You kind of run into these places by accident, and then people kind of have the tendency to keep the secret to themselves because they don't want to ruin it. But the next time they don't play, and it turns out everyone found out, and you know, the green fee's double what it was the last time. So it's a bit of a cat and mouse game, I think. But there are way more places like that than eye-popping sticker prices of $900 to go play Sawgrass or $1,000 to go play Shadow Creek or those types of places.
Ryan Ballingy joining us. Thanks so much for your time. You know, I'll throw a little plug in for Utah Golf. We need to get you out here. I know you've spent some time in Mesquite. I think that's where we first met. But there's, you know, Utah Golf up in the mountains in the summertime is phenomenal. You can play some of these golf courses that are same thing. They're either state run or county run, and you're looking at, you know, like 40, 50 bucks, maybe up to 60, and you're playing in these beautiful venues with it's like you're away from it all, but you're playing golf. So there are great places, and we have a bunch of them here in Utah, which we're certainly excited about. But thanks for sharing that. I didn't know that we were going to necessarily go there today, but it was a fun kind of look at it. And you know what, with the Masters coming up, it's a good celebration of the game where you can go enjoy a really inexpensive sandwich and drink and watch the Masters. Getting the ticket, on the other hand, a little tougher to get, but nevertheless.
Yeah, you pay for one part, and then once you get in, you don't pay as much. But then they get you at the merch tent, and that's what they know there. But I should throw out a plug for St. George, Utah. It's not probably on the tip of everybody's tongue, but it's one of the best destination places in America where you can go play 7-10 wonderful, wonderful golf courses, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg. And it's 90 minutes to fly into Vegas, just straight across the desert, and you can throw a Mesquite there, as you mentioned, that has a ton of golf too. That's one of the best places in America if you want to go get bang for your buck, kind of like the Pebble or the Myrtle Beach of the West.
Yeah. Well, now with Black Desert there, you got to come check that out as well. So yep. We'll schedule a time for you to do that. Ryan, thanks. Enjoy Myrtle Beach, buddy. We'll talk to you real soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. That's Ryan Ballingy joining us here on Real Golf Radio. Always appreciate his time and insight, and just a good dude. Loves the game and just has a fun time out there. He's a fun guy. I'd like to play some more. We haven't played much. I think we got around once out in Mesquite 20 years ago, probably.
Yeah, so long time.
We're definitely overdue for a trip with a little golf trip with Ballingy. All right, short break. Thanks for joining us here. Hour number two is coming up next.